Support for WVIA Pop Shop comes from the F.M. Kirby Center for the Performing Arts in downtown Wilkes-Barre, presenting concerts, comedy, family entertainment, and community events in a historic theater. Information and upcoming events at kirbycenter.org.
So, Patrick, Supergirl is out, and that means reviews are out. And one of the things that's really caught my attention about Supergirl and reviews is there's been a whole conversation about the reviews. So we're like to the stage of not reviews of the movie, but reviews of reviews of the movie.
Yes, I have some of my own reviews of the reviews of the movie.
Oh, you're going to do a review of the review of the review?
No, just a review of the reviews.
Okay.
So, but yeah, so I have three reasons why I think the reviews are the way they've been, which we could generously call them mixed.
Well, there was one in Variety that was
less mixed,
scorched earth kind of review. I think it described it. I have my notes here. Dystopian, flat, and super horrendous.
Yeah, that might be one of the nicer things that was said in that review.
That was the title. The review went into more detail.
Yeah, so I think kind of thinking about the audience for this movie, I think there's a segment of the comic book movie audience that was not going to be a fan of this movie from the get-go.
I think.
Just because
I can imagine
a movie about a female superhero.
Oh.
I think there is a segment of the comic book movie audience that because this version of Supergirl doesn't fit the one they've sort of seen in comics that's kind of overtly sexualized, that was not going to appeal to them. And the one that I find really interesting is there's a segment of the audience that went into this expecting it to be a much more accurate adaptation of the graphic novel that it's based on. And I've seen a lot of negative reviews based on this is not the story that I wanted to see.
I was wondering if you were going to land on that, because I've seen several that are upset with what they see as a pretty drastic departure.
Yeah, drastic departure, and we'll probably get to this later on in the show, also a much less complex storyline than what's in the graphic novel.
Yes, yeah, for sure. So there's a lot of chatter. There's a lot of heat. But if you want to cut through all of that noise, there's only one place that a person might go.
And
that place would be?
I believe that place is Pop Shop.
And here we are. Hi, I'm Alan Austin.
And I'm Patrick Hamilton.
And welcome to the Pop Shop. Here, stories on the screen inspire conversations about the real world off of the screen.
And this week, we are turning our attention to Supergirl, the latest installment in the James Gunn-helmed DC rebooted movie universe.
When you find yourself enjoying this episode or previous episodes, please do all the things you're supposed to do on the internet. Like, share, turn on your notifications, and of course, you can tell your friends as well.
And Pop Shop is brought to you by the FM Kirby Center, and we'll be talking with Gene from the Kirby Center a little later on in the show.
But before Gene and the Kirby Center rolls in, or really just Gene rolls in, we should set up the film, Patrick.
Yes, we should. So, Supergirl is, of course, the sequel to last year's fairly successful Superman movie. It's directed by Craig Gillespie, who did both Cruella and I, Tonya, and written by Anna Nagira. It is loosely, and I would say very loosely, based on the acclaimed limited series and then graphic novel Superman Woman of Tomorrow, written by Tom King with art by Bilquis Evely. In both the graphic novel and the film, Supergirl teams up with a young girl, Ruthie, in pursuit of the brigand Krem of the Yellow Hills after he murders Ruthie's family and poisons Supergirl's beloved dog, Krypto.
So the movie stars Millie Alcock, perhaps best known, I think, for HBO's House of the Dragon. It also brings David Corenswet back in his role, reprising his role as Superman. Eve Ridley plays Ruthie, the young girl who inspires Supergirl on this quest. And, of course, you couldn't go through the cast list without mentioning a former DC cinematic star, Jason Momoa, once Aquaman, now inhabiting the role of Lobo.
Yes, and inhabit it he does.
There's a kind of inhabitation going on there. And so as we start to, Patrick, examine this film, often over the, we've been doing this for 10 years or whatever, like you and I have been sitting and talking about pop culture for a long time. And I think one of your most repeated phrases, if we did like a word cloud, would be postmodern pastiche.
Yes.
Yeah. So do you want to maybe introduce the audience to the idea of the postmodern pastiche, and then we can explore the film?
Well, I think in terms of pastiche in general is something that is a conglomeration of a whole bunch of different things. I always explain it to my students that if you think of a collage that you made in elementary school, mm-hmm. you would have like a theme of fruits and you would cut up pictures from a magazine and you'd have all kind of the different fruits. That's a collage. Pastiche is a collage without the unifying theme. It's just a whole bunch of things cut up and spliced together into a larger whole, but doesn't necessarily have that unifying theme.
Okay. Okay. And then the dictionary definition would add sort of an imitation of mm-hmm. the character or the type or the technique yeah. of other creative artists.
Yeah.
In the case of a film like this.
Is very fitting with the postmodern idea that there's nothing really new to be created. It's just right. a recycling of things that other exist. So mm-hmm. you're not really creating anything new so much as mimicking other styles.
Right. And so Hope often tells me that nothing is new. Mm-hmm. That, like, there's nothing truly original anymore in the culture that we consume.
Particularly now that we're in the downward turn of the MCU.
Did you just say that out loud? Are we actually in the downward turn of the MCU?
I don't think there's any denying that.
We're going to have to start watching different films on this show. That's going to be such a sad, sad yeah. turn. So one of the things that struck me as I was watching this film is I could see what I thought were other kinds of films mm-hmm. popping through. They're kind of like peeking around the corner saying, like, I've seen that.
When you say other kinds, places. Are we talking about particular films, particular genres, both?
I would say specific films, okay. but they're very genre kinds of okay. films that you see poking through.
Yeah.
And so I don't know if you saw that as well.
I did. I'm just curious if we see the same films. And yeah. I think we might have a different reaction to the nature of the pastiche in this film.
I think one of the really big questions that this film kind of inspired mm-hmm. for me was, if a film is a pastiche, mm-hmm. that's not necessarily a bad thing.
Correct.
Can you make something new of it? Mm-hmm. And if so, how do you make that work?
Yeah.
How do you take work that previously exists mm-hmm. and turn it into something mm-hmm. new? So you want to trade?
Sure.
Like films or genres that we yeah. saw in this?
Okay.
Do you want to... Okay.
I'll let you go first.
So the first one I saw immediately was kind of your fault, because when we were talking about the trailer, mm-hmm. you said, boy, those villains, they really look like Guardians of the Galaxy villains.
No, it was the aliens. I think I was talking about the aliens, not so much the villains.
Right. So, but there was, I thought, a very kind of strong Guardians of the Galaxy mm-hmm. vibe here. From the dirty, rundown ship, a lot of the ship looked mm-hmm. like something that would pop right out of the MCU.
Yep.
To me, wisecracking heroes on a space odyssey feels mm-hmm. very Guardians of the Galaxy. So to me, it was hard to watch the film and not see Guardians mm-hmm. as a prototype for telling this kind of story.
Yeah, and you could add to that, Millie Alcock's Supergirl and her connection to music. She's got the Walkman that she carries around, or a Zune or something like that, or iPod or something.
Right.
Very similar to Star Wars. And there is, the film does kind of have a hard time escaping kind of that James Gunn aesthetic.
Yes, and unfortunately the James Gunn aesthetic is so associated with the MCU yeah. and with Guardians.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
So you just mentioned another one I think is a slip. You said Star Wars?
Oh, no, I didn't think I said Star Wars.
I think you...
I said Star-Lord.
Oh, Star-Lord.
Yeah.
Well, Star Wars is next on my list.
Okay.
Sorry. But like this is
so
like
we're done
kind
with
of
the trading back and forth.
Well, I thought you had spoiled Star Wars, so I'm sorry. Is Star Wars on your list or no?
No.
Okay.
Star Wars is nowhere on my list.
It felt like it was to me in terms of like you meet a lot of neat creatures and aliens, and yeah. there's like a space opera to it. All right, go ahead. I'll give you two now.
Okay, two. So I have yeah. two that in particular I've seen a lot of people talking about,
yes.
which is True Grit.
This has so much True Grit. Absolutely.
And the other one that I've seen a lot of people talking about is John Wick.
I've not seen the John Wick films.
Well,
so
there's only one little bit of John Wick you need to know, which is that okay. the whole thing starts off because of his dog. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and there's been a lot of people, I've seen a lot of people complaining about the film being just a rehash of True Grit, just a rehash of John Wick. Now, what I want to say to push back against that
yeah.
is both of those come from the graphic novel itself. That those yeah. elements of the movie are where it's actually in some ways most faithful to yeah. the graphic novel, in that the revenge plot, the True Grit plot with mm-hmm. Ruthie, family killed, getting more experienced help to track down, you know, the murderer, that yeah. very True Grit plot, that is all in Woman of Tomorrow.
Yeah.
There's a twist on it in the book that's not in the film, but the dog being in peril is another one that is in okay. the graphic novel. So yeah. I don't feel it's fair to critique the film for that when that's something that's coming from the adaptation source.
Well, I think that's fair, but it was hard to miss. Even the Ruthie gets discovered going to the river happens in True Grit as well. But the idea of a young girl pursuing revenge slash justice, depending on how you want to define sort of Maddie's quest in this.
We might be defining that later in the show.
Right. We have to, I think, to make this film meaningful in some ways. But she just gets two roosters in this film instead of the one rooster that Maddie gets. Yeah. So for sure, I think both of those make sense. I would add Mad Max, which is one that I thought of during the film, but was just like everybody is writing about that as well. In that film, this would be Fury Road in particular, a Morton Joe essentially kidnaps and forces women to be his bride.
Yes.
And there's obviously a human trafficking kind of aspect to this film that also plays forward. So, and it also kind of set in a post-apocalyptic sort of setting often.
Somewhat,
Depending on where we're at in the film. Yeah. But there is sort of a Fury Road vibe that's a little bit difficult to escape.
Yeah, I agree that and that is very different from the graphic novel. Krem is an ordinary human in the graphic novel. He is nothing like a Mad Max type person. I do want to argue that I can see maybe why the film did that, because I feel like the film, I think, faced the danger of if they go with a Krem more like what's in the comic. He's a much more complicated and complex character. I feel kind of the same way about Lobo as well, that if you do either of those characters more, you run the risk of having, in what is supposed to be sort of a female-centered superhero movie, the male characters kind of eclipsing the main female characters. It's you kind of end up with Ken in Barbie again. And so I feel like the kind of Mad Maxing Krem and just making him kind of ludicrously evil in a lot of ways. Like, he's kind of ridiculously evil in the film. That it kind of, to me, it read as kind of a way to reduce that risk. Like, he's a very flat character.
100%.
And so he doesn't run the risk of having your villain, your male villain, eclipse your female superhero in the film. So I can kind of see a reason why they might have gone that route.
I can see that, but I think there's a danger in that, too. Mm. In some ways, if you want to make a film where the bad guy is a human trafficker, the way in which it sort of uses human trafficking as just a plot device to establish how evil Krem is felt troublesome to me.
Yeah.
On the other hand, like, I think as we have this conversation, we're really talking about how hard it is to try to figure out how to tell this story, right? Yeah. In Fury Road, the women who are forced into becoming a Morton Joe's brides, they at least have names.
Yeah.
And you get some sense of their stories. In this film, the women, you see them in a cage at one point, but there's no real sense of them as human beings or characters.
Any of them. None of them are named, except maybe we get the name of the one daughter of the couple on the planet.
But again, like, such a twisty plot device, obviously. Yeah. So, so the film raises some complications. What about Beetlejuice?
Oh, I didn't see much of Beetlejuice.
Well, Lobo just struck me as a little Beetlejuicy. And I'm not sure whether it was the pancake makeup that was so thickly layered upon Jason Momoa. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure. He just had sort of a Beetlejuice kind of energy to the way he delivered his lines from time to time. Beetlejuice is not high on my list.
Yeah.
But there was like a little Beetlejuiciness going on.
I'd qualify that in that is more of a Beetlejuice in Beetlejuice. Beetlejuice? Oh, I just said it three times.
Are we going to be okay?
Michael Keaton seemed a little tired
in
that. And Momoa didn't seem as Lobo-y as we might have expected in this film. It seemed a little more laggard, I would say.
Yeah. So I've said this to you before. Lobo has always been a character that I didn't care for.
Yeah, don't have any... Same. And don't care about Lobo at all.
I don't think I've ever read a Lobo comic book.
Same.
I don't know much about his background.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a little Bible in there, too. The floating city felt kind of like an ark. Krypton is kind of set in these biblical kinds of terms. But I guess we all ripping off the Bible all the time. Anyway...
Yeah. And then the only other thing, which we might get to later, is I think there's also ways in which we can talk about this film and some of what it does as a pastiche of the most recent Superman film as well. There's one particular moment that I want to talk about later on in the show as and maybe kind of embodying some of the ways that the film has struggled too.
Right, yes. And it has struggled for sure, both at the box office and in terms of critical opinion. I think that's something to talk about in the second half of the show. When, by the way, as we move to talking about spoilers in the show, we will also move to a discussion about morality and the way that it's treated in the Supergirl.
Yes, and if you're liking what you're hearing so far, be sure and like the episode, subscribe to the podcast, and turn on notifications so you never miss a show.
Who would want to miss that fun? And now, Gene and the Kirby. And we've got Gene with us from the Kirby Center to talk a little bit, Gene, about what's coming up.
Hello, yes. So we have the W. Curtis Vaughn's film series coming up. That started 2 weeks ago with Agnes. We had a great crowd that came out for that one.
Awesome.
Thank you to Alan Stout, Visit Luzerne County for that. Coming up on Wednesday, we have The Secret Agent.
Patrick, you're looking forward to that one?
I am. That's one that I missed when it came out and got all the Oscar buzz. So I'm very excited to have the opportunity to see that one in theaters.
Very cool.
Good. You'll have two chances to see it. 1 p.m. for $5 or 7 p.m. for $7. And that's on Wednesday, July 8th. Now, we're showing VIA Short Takes documentaries before our W. Curtis Mons film series again. That's a great tradition that we now have with our Curtis Mons film series, and we're keeping it going this year. We're going to show Wings of Valor with that one.
Very cool. Excellent. So, anything else going on we need to know about at the Kirby?
Yeah. So we started this great initiative with United Way of Wyoming Valley called Camp United. And we have another one coming up before our big screen summer series. That one's going to be on Tuesday, July 14th. It's our Honesdale National Bank big screen summer series. And we're showing Dumbo on July 14th.
Oh, that's a classic.
A classic.
Yeah. The animated Dumbo?
Correct.
Oh, yeah. I hope so. Yeah. Because the other one's not.
Yeah, that was, yeah.
Does the, not the fall live action the classic did not, category. Yeah. The live action never does. So your colleague Neil has talked to us a little bit about this series and the way that it works for kids.
Yes.
Yeah, and there's some giveaways too, right?
Yes. So the movies themselves are free for kids under 12. If you're 13 or over, it's only $5 to get in. Before the movie at 11 a.m., Wyoming or United Way of Wyoming Valley's Camp United starts. That includes a free lunch for kids, and then kids also get a free book. The book will be read during the event, and then kids can take the book home to read it too. And the book that they're reading on July 14th is called Eric and Julieta. It's mine, or Es Mio.
Awesome. My daughter would tell you for sure that there's nothing better in the world than a free book. Like, she just loves books in a way.
I think so too.
I would say that too.
Oh, would you? Yeah, excellent.
Who doesn't love a free book?
Whenever we added that to the program, it just warmed my heart. It feels really good to be working on something like that.
It's really great. And this kind of programming is one of the reasons why the Kirby is so important as an institution in our community.
I think so, too. And honestly, that's one of the best things about working there. The team there is really great, and they all believe in that mission. And it's really great to partner with an organization like United Way of Wyoming Valley. We'll have six stations at that event with other organizations in the community, too. So look out for some names that you might recognize.
Very cool. Right. Would you say like a second perk, but not as good a one, would be showing up on the Pop Shop?
I would say that, yeah.
Good.
Don't tell anyone at the Kirby, but...
It's a very definitive.
This is going on my resume, and it might go above some other things. So.
Awesome. It was fantastic. Very nice to have you with
us
thanks
today. For coming.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me.
Thanks so much, Gene. Really appreciate spending a little time with you. Now, as we move to the second half, Patrick, this will be the spoiler-filled part of the show. So if you've not seen the film yet, maybe you want to wait.
Yes. And so we're going to do a deep dive into what I like to think of as the morality of Supergirl.
You like to think of as the morality of Supergirl?
Yes. Well, we talked about talking about morality, but as we usually do on the show, we didn't really suss out what that was going to be.
Right.
So I've got my approach to it, but it might be different from what you're doing with
it. Got it. Here's where I want to start.
Okay.
It is never moral under any circumstances to manipulate an audience with cuteness. And I am looking at you, Crypto, and you in particular, Puppy Crypto. There is, he's right in front of me. I feel bad mouthing the puppy as he sits in front of me. But there was a lot of cuteness in here.
Yes.
But that's not my main moral kind of
okay, good. I was,
point.
Yeah, okay.
I do have a couple superhero science questions I want to mix in as we're talking, but I think they'll arise naturally.
Okay.
So real quickly with the vet after Crypto gets poisoned.
Yes.
So Ruthie has to translate what the vet's saying to Kara.
Yes.
But everything Kara says, the vet understands.
I believe so, yes.
Yeah. So is it just that she's more comfortable hearing than speaking?
Or it's, I it's think... Just, it, There's a scene where Kara, I think Kara says something in the bar scene about another alien speaking universal language or common language or something like that. So it might be that Kara speaking common, which the vet can understand but not speak.
Okay. Maybe that's it. So anyway, we should get to morality. I have deeper science questions to ask you.
Okay.
For sure.
Excellent.
All right. So you want to talk about your approach to morality?
Well, so it's one of the things that struck me in the film is that between this and also I'm going to throw Superman kind of into it as well.
Okay.
There seemed to be a certain kind of moral structure. There's the scene in one of the flashbacks where Kara's mom says to her, you know, be good, you know, don't worry about being nice, you know, be mean, you know. So there's kind of this idea between being good versus being nice.
Yes.
And I kind of thought about, well, Superman is obviously someone who is and does good and is nice.
Right.
And then you've got Krem, who in this film is clearly evil and does evil.
Yeah.
And then you've got, I think, kind of Lobo, who is clearly doesn't do good, except kind of amorally.
Unintentionally.
That if there is good, he's not out to do good.
Right.
And, you know, is not particularly nice. And then you've got sort of Kara in there, who is, I think, meant to be good, but not necessarily nice.
Right.
And then all of that is kind of revolving around Ruthie and kind of figuring out where Ruthie is going to end up.
Right. Yeah, that's definitely how the film is structured.
And that's one of the ways, for a lot of people that felt that there was really no reason for Lobo to be in this movie.
Yeah.
That's one of the ways I could see why Lobo's in this movie, is that he is a kind of a counterpoint to Kara and Superman, but to Kara in particular.
So I can see that, but I would have enjoyed the movie more without Lobo. I just, like, for me, as you said, there's not enough time to make him an interesting or well-developed character. Yeah. He didn't work so well for me. So, and I think all of what you're talking about then is also kind of in the context of trauma, right? And thinking about what it means to be kind or nice or good or evil in the context of trauma. And I thought one of the most effective parts of the film comes early when we meet Supergirl. And for people who don't know the story in particular, she's on a pub crawl through all these red sun planets. And the importance of it, the red sun being that it takes away all of her superpowers. And she says something to the effect, like, I'm here because I want to feel something. And so there is this sense of trauma in the character and sort of how one then goes about trying to process that trauma in a world that calls us to a kind of morality or ethical behavior, but in which none of us come as sort of just knights in shining armor or pure superheroes.
Yeah, well, and I think in a lot of ways, part of, I think, the arc in the film is Kara trying to keep Ruthie from going down a much darker path.
Absolutely.
Like, you know, Ruthie's intent is to hunt Krem down and kill him.
Yeah.
And Kara is largely trying to prevent her from doing that.
Right.
Which, again, that is something that does carry over from the graphic novel, though it ends very differently in the graphic novel than it does in the film.
Do you want to talk about that? I've heard some significant complaints online about the way in which it isn't true. It is not true to the graphic novel.
Yeah, so in the graphic novel, first off, Ruthie narrates the novel, and after all of experiences with Supergirl, she writes a book about their experience together, and that's her narration. And she tells the story of how when they finally confronted Krem, Supergirl killed him. What you find out at the end of the graphic novel, when it jumps several centuries ahead, is Supergirl, besides stopping Ruthie from killing him, Ruthie stopped Supergirl from killing him. And instead, they put him in the Phantom Zone for centuries. And at the end of the novel, they let him out. He's completely repented. He begs the older Ruthie for forgiveness. And older Ruthie whacks him on the head with her walking stick, and she and Supergirl walk away.
And that seems like a pretty substantial, then, departure. I saw somebody online complaining that that the person who wrote the film didn't understand the graphic novel.
And that, I think there's a problem with that. Because Tom King has said that the end of the novel, his intent is that it's not ambiguous. Krem is not dead at the end of the graphic novel.
Right.
Because he says in one panel, after Ruthie hits him, you see his arm kind of cradle. It's all in silhouette.
I've seen
his
that.
Arms against his head. The problem is that there's a panel after that where Krim lies completely prone on the ground in the exact same position that earlier Ruthie's father was shown in. Mm. And so it does seem like it is ambiguous as much as Tom King does not want it to be ambiguous in that there is nothing there that in that final panel that makes it seem like Krim is clearly alive.
Right.
So it is...
It would have to be a strained metaphorical reading.
So it's because King has said he does not want it, he did not want it to be ambiguous, and I'm kind of like, I'm sorry, it is, because the panel you're saying is the next to last panel.
Yeah.
And then there's one more.
But it's still a pretty big departure to have Supergirl actually kill Krem in this film.
Yes.
And to me, like, the way I'm thinking about framing this film as like an ethical question has to do not just with Supergirl's trauma, but the way in which we imagine justice, right? What does justice mean? Is justice an eye for an eye? Is it okay for Supergirl to be the one that kills Krem? Like, even if you accept capital punishment, as a Quaker, I don't. But, like, if you do, is it okay for an individual vigilante to take this upon themselves, right? And is, like... For Ruthie, the lesson she needs to learn is that revenge isn't justice.
Right.
That there's a distinction between them. And yet at the end, it still feels somewhat revengeful to me. And that raises, I think, really complicated questions that you and I have talked about for a long time in terms of what does it mean for us as a culture? What does it mean for us as Americans when we let superheroes who are really vigilantes, who work outside of the law, they're not elected, they're not part of the Constitution. What does it mean for justice if superpowered folks get to decide who's good and who's bad? I mean, this film makes it easy. Krem is obviously the bad guy. But when you take that and you start applying it anywhere else, it's so much more complicated. And so
you're really, really trying not to mention The Dark Knight right now, aren't you?
This is The Dark Knight, right? Yeah. And so, I again, unsurprised, I'm sure you're not surprised that this is where I'm struggling with the end of the movie.
Well,
that,
it's also interesting to think in conjunction with Man of Steel in the Snyder version of Superman, where he kills Zod at the end of that. And that was something that people saw as a gross violation of the character. And that should not have happened. And yet we're not seeing that same hue and cry with Supergirl's killing of Krim.
Why do you think that is? Like, why would it be that when Supergirl does it, because Kara in the comics is more like Superman, right? She's not apt to kill.
Well, yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so by and large.
Why do you think Superman killing creates a furor, but Supergirl killing doesn't seem to in the same way?
I don't think, as much as they are similar, I don't know that Supergirl stands for the values that Superman stands for in people's minds nearly as much.
Okay.
That Superman is kind of that embodiment of truth, justice, and whatever else. And I don't think Kara necessarily has that as fully attached to her. So there's not as much, I think, sort of moral valence attached to Kara as there is to Clark.
I think that's true, especially if you think about Superman. Like, that moral valence was connected to him at least as early as World War II.
Yeah, like, it's always been there.
Where he comes to stand for something else.
Yeah.
So it's a complicated film.
Yes.
But we always make it uncomplicated at the end of the show. It's pop or shop.
Yes.
Right?
It is.
So it is pop or shop time. And we've not mentioned Kara once.
We have not.
And that's a tragedy because it's the only way to get Kara on camera.
Is it?
Well, you've not been on camera yet. So are you ready to pop or shop, Kara?
I think so.
Okay.
I have to go first?
I think you should. Oh, yeah. Okay. The camera's on you.
Well, I'm going to pop it.
I like the way that you twisted the panel back
and
forth.
Did you? Yeah, like, didn't know dramatic. It was going to happen, right?
Yeah. Very good.
Yeah. I really enjoyed the film. I actually went into the theater with, like, two thoughts. I was scared. You know, the DC Universe has, you know, gone back and forth a little bit, struggling a little bit.
And back.
And then the online stuff, like you guys mentioned previously. I was afraid that this was going to be a really bad movie. And I don't think it was. I think I have a problem with audiences or people reviewing the film specific films like this where it's a female-led film, I think automatically there is some kind of struggle with seeing a woman, you know, portray a powerful person and have all these layers to them. But overall, I enjoyed it. I think people should go and see the film and not give it such a dismal review.
Fair enough. Patrick?
I am fully on Team Pop.
Oh, wow. Like, yeah. That's an enthusiastic, very graphic.
I really enjoyed the film. Yeah. I will not, you know, it is a much less complex story than what's in the graphic novel. I will, it's very, it's almost everything that's complicated in the graphic novel gets simplified. I think it has some issues, particularly in the climactic battle scene, which is supposed to be sort of Kara's big moment. But, and this is where I think it connects back to Superman. It's shot kind of like the Mr. Terrific scene in Superman, where we're kind of watching Kara through Ruthie. And there's been a lot of complaints about the cover of Jimmy Eat World in the middle as the needle drop for that song. And I don't necessarily have a problem with that, except for the fact that in the middle as a song reflects Ruthie's position in that moment, not Kara's. And so it feels like it's supposed to be Kara's big moment, but how they put it together kind of takes away from that. So it's definitely a movie that has, I think, some flaws and some inconsistencies. But like Kara, I enjoyed it. And I thought it was a nice breath of fresh air in that, as some people have complained, superhero movies require a lot of homework these days. This is a film that requires no homework. If you know that Supergirl is Superman's cousin, that is about all you need to know to follow this film. And I thought that was kind of a nice break.
And even if you don't know that they're related, I don't think you'd even need to know that. Yeah. So yeah, fair enough. So could it be a three pop?
What?
Could it be a pop? Mm. And I'm doing the Kara thing. I'm doing the back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
Mine is, wait, am I doing this right for the camera?
Don't do that.
It is a pop slash shop. Here's my thought. Like, that's why I'm holding, well, this way it's seeing too much shop. There we go. So it is, for me, I did not have the same reaction that you guys had. It was not a film that I found super engaging. I agree with Kara. It's not really bad. I don't think it's really good. I think that for me, it was a little more tropey and more kind of what we've had for a long time. Like Superman was as well. Like I'm not sure I remember Superman quite as fondly as I did when we saw the film, but I still liked the film. But it was trying to do something new thematically, I think, and leaning into kindness. This was a film that I felt was a step back in sort of like it was a by-the-number kind of superhero story. I would have liked a little more exploration, I think, of the really complicated questions that it asks and an exploration of trauma. Like, it's there, but it's not there like I... Look, if you love superhero movies, you should definitely go see it. You'll really like this movie, I think. If you hate superhero movies, it's not for you. If you like movies, it's perfectly fine film.
Oh,
so
that's where I line.
Okay. Yeah, that's where I land. Anyway, so I guess still the vote on the show is pop.
I think officially the show is saying pop. Yeah, we lean pop.
That I like. That's very CNN like election day kind of thing.
Can we get like a giant like map?
Oh, and then we could stand up and we could draw things
could draw on
it.
Yes, oh, yes. Kara, one step up from the paddles
for the next episode.
Every episode is something.
Yeah, we gotta add something, some new bells and whistles every episode.
Yeah. So anyway, thank you so much for joining us this week for the Pop Shop.
Yes, and if you enjoyed our discussion of Supergirl, be sure to like the episode, subscribe to the podcast, and turn on notifications so you never miss a moment of Pop Shop.
As always, we want to thank our friends at the Kirby Center for their support. It's notable that they have a couple of superhero films led by females coming in the next couple of weeks.
Yes, they've got Mary Poppins on Wednesday, July 5th. At 1 p.m. and 7 p.m., and Frozen 2 the following week on Tuesday, July 21st at 1 p.m.
Mary Poppins, clearly a superhero because she's a great speller and she can make kids take their medicine.
A great speller. Oh, because of supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. I get that one.
Some people would get that.
And Elsa clearly would be among, you know, the Marvel mutants more than likely.
Oh, she's the Disney Princess Universe version of Bobby Drake's Iceman.
Something
right?
like that. Which speaking
is
of
a
Iceman
great
and the X-Men,
to next week.
Into next week's topic, which will be the beginning of season 2 of X-Men 97, the streaming series on Disney Plus that continues the beloved 1990s X-Men The Animated Series.
Thanks for being with us this week, and come join the party next.
Support for WVIA Pop Shop comes from the FM Kirby Center for the Performing Arts in downtown Wilkes-Barre, presenting concerts, comedy, family entertainment, and community events in a historic theater. Information and upcoming events at kirbycenter.org.